Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of August, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Channel Seeds Grains Analyst Matt Bennett. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Dan Zwicker is out of the office for the Labor Day weekend. Speaking of which, no markets on Monday, but we will have a closing market report, and it'll be a special one. Jim Bauer from Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana, will join us on that particular program. That's on Monday, but today we'll continue our conversation again on the marketplace with Matt Bennett. We'll take up the randomness of USDA reports and how they are quantitative, and maybe how crop tours are qualitative and how you can use the two together and how they're important together. That was Scott Irwin. He's an ag economist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And we'll finish it up with our discussion on the weather forecast. Mike Tenor will be here. He has some thoughts on the size of the national average bushels per acre yield for corn. And we'll hear all about that as we finish up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois. Public media does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to the CME Group and check the numbers as they finished up. From the corn pit nearby September contract at $3.61 and three quarters up, 5 3/4 for the day. December at $3.69 1/4, 4 1/4 higher. The March at $3.82 1/4 up 4 cents. July 3 3/4 higher, $3.97 the settlement price. In December at $4.09 1/4 in the corn pit. For next year, 2015, up 1 3/4. From the soy complex nearby, beans were down 10 cents, rather 12 cents. At $10.73 3/4, the November, the harvest month, at $10.28 3/4 up 5. January 10.36 1/2, 4 3/4 higher, and March soybeans 10.43 3/4 up 4 1/2. July up 5, and November's at 10.39 1/2 for next year, up 3 1/4. Bean meal futures finished the day up $16.70, and the bean oil 3 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures from the CME Group finished $1.55 higher at $154.75. The feeder cattle for the afternoon at $218.57 1/2, up 42 1/2 for the day. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. Lean hogs on the afternoon finished up like this. The nearby October at $95.85, and that finished 7 1/2 cents lower for the day. Here's what the outside markets look like. Crude oil futures, $94.54 a barrel, up 66 cents today. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.84 6/10. That's 1 4/10 lower on the afternoon. The gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB, $2.74 7/10, just about 0.1 cent higher on the day. Natural gas at $4.04 1/2, up 4 2/10 cent. Ethanol futures at $2.18 8/10, settled 3 1/10 cent higher for the afternoon. Dow Jones Industrial Average now at about 17,067, down 26 points. The gold futures at $1,289 at $6.75 higher. Silver trading 1963, up 0.16, and the dollar index at 82.510. That's up 0.061 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area today says we'll have mostly sunny skies and a high of 84 degrees tonight, cloudy and 69 tomorrow, 40% chance of rainfall after 1 in the afternoon. Otherwise, partly sunny, a high of 87, a southwest wind tomorrow at 7 to 11. And then Friday night, a 50% chance of showers, some thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a low of 69 degrees. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 84. Southwest winds at 8 miles an hour, gusting to 14, all the way up to 20. Chance of precip on Saturday sit at 60%. And Saturday night, that'll drop to 30% after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy and 68 degrees. Sunday, a 30% chance of rainfall continues. Partly sunny skies and 84 degrees. That's a look at the weather forecast. We'll have a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenor at the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon on the phone line rather than Dan Zwicker, who normally joins us for Thursday. He took off a little bit early for Labor Day. Is Matt Bennett. He's Channel Seeds Grains Market Analyst and Specialist Consultant. Joins us from his Windsor, Illinois office. Good afternoon to you. Thanks so much for being with us, Matt.
Yeah, no problem, Tom.
Well, as we talk about this marketplace and we discussed earlier this morning, it looks like there is a good corn crop and continues to be a good corn crop and a soybean crop that really enjoyed rainfall across a large part of the Midwest in the last few days. The rain may continue to come. There will be some that might be worried about more rain than they want, but at this time of year, I would think that would just be a good sign for production.
Yeah, this time of year, it's obviously a good thing for beans. You know, guys might be worried about a little bit too much water, of course, but for the most part, rain does make grain, especially in the month of August, and we're in late August. A lot of these beans have been running a little bit behind, and I think this is definitely going to be exactly what a lot of the beans needed.
What are your thoughts about basis levels locally? Because there are some things on old crop that are happening at this point, especially for soybeans. Where are the basis levels really good? And I think some are still a little on the weak side in other places.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I noticed last week one day a $1 disparity within about 10 miles of me in country elevators on old crop bean bases. To me, it's almost a moot issue. There are very few beans that I can tell you that I know about that are unsold. There are still a few, but I think, you know, as we get closer to harvest, there's obviously going to be some tug of war there. And I know that we've got some beans that are being harvested in the south. And as we get more beans, obviously it's going to take a little bit of that inverse away. You know, if I was still actually sitting on a few, I'd be awfully worried because basis has actually settled down a fair amount in the last few days and toned down quite a bit. And I've seen basis break as much as $1.50 in some locations.
No, this farmers sometimes misconstrue these things and think this means that we will have better prices for soybeans going into the fall once they get into harvest. That isn't always the case. Oftentimes is not the case. It's simply a matter of supply runs out momentarily, and so they have to bid up for it. What do you expect? And when, as we move through the month, the end of this month and into the month of September in terms of basis erosion, and how far apart are old and new crop bids at this time?
Well, it just depends on where you're at, but the old and new crop bids are you know, at least $1.50 apart in most places. And so, obviously, if a guy had a chance, you know, to cut some early beans, which I don't know, I don't think there's anything even close around us, then it would certainly be a good thing. But whenever you start having a harvest, you know, in the south and it starts creeping to the north, obviously you're going to end up taking basis is going to take a hit. And so, you know, I would expect by the time that guys are cutting beans in central Illinois, there's not going to be much premium. I just don't see it happening because I think that there will be enough beans in the pipeline at that point. You know, we're switching from a really tight old crop situation to one, you know, of literally abundance compared to the last few years when we look at stocks and stocks to usage.
What are your thoughts on the corn market?
Well, I think with corn, it's a little bit tough to gauge this, but you know, obviously there's lots of different scenarios throughout the Midwest. I've talked to guys that think they've got the best crop they've ever had, and I've talked to guys that don't have such a good crop, and so this is a pretty tough year to market. But one thing that I can say with relative certainty is that the basis is most likely going to be pretty weak in the middle of harvest, especially, you know, in some of these areas in central Illinois where we've got pretty darn good corn, and, you know, in Indiana and Iowa. I mean, we know a lot of areas have a really, really good yield coming. And so, you know, if nothing else, again, I would say a guy that maybe needs a little bit of money in the fall would probably be wise to at least lock in his basis, if nothing else. And then I really don't see the board rallying a whole lot. It sure was nice to see this today, but I don't really expect this to be too long-lived.
As a farmer, are you going to put corn in the bin first? I think that's what you've told me in the past. And then if you have to move it into town, store it there?
Well, I think that what I would recommend for most guys is to go ahead and be delivering to town at first, just simply because I'm afraid we're going to run out of space. And it might be such a thing that the elevators may not be able to run near as fast as what guys want. If you've got five or six or seven guys delivering to an elevator that normally can dump several guys, this corn's good enough that if guys, you know, have the ability to get it to town, it's really going to create some havoc. And so I think that it might be such a thing I deliver right away, especially if there's any drying deals. And I could foresee that happen for a week or two. And then after that, I would probably be looking to, you know, fill my bins last, simply because I'm afraid a lot of these elevators are actually going to run out of room this year pretty quickly.
I'm sorry, you have told me that before, and I picked it up the wrong way again. But you're gonna fill those bins last. With soybeans, what are you going to do?
I think with beans, you know, in my opinion, most of the guys that, and myself included, I would say about all of my beans are either priced or protected, and so they're going to go across the scales. I'm going to save storage for corn, is the way that I'm looking at it. I know that there's going to be, for instance, right now, a lot of elevators have a 20 to 24 cent carry to January, because, you know, they'd like to encourage guys maybe to not go ahead and bring it in the fall. And so, you know, if a guy wanted to sell right now, I'd probably be smart to say, hey, these are going to be some of my bin bushels. I'm going to sell them for January and pick up that carry, because that's definitely more than normal.
Are you of the opinion, and I think that we've read this from Daryl Good in this past week, that there is a possibility that the corn low, at least in the futures markets, will come earlier rather than later in the fall?
Well, I think that's a definite possibility as far as the way the board works. But, you know, as you and I have talked about before, I think the thing people need to be real cautious about is the board may come to a price level that we encounter a fair amount of support. You know, and then we may break basis 20 or 30 cents. And so I definitely want guys to be aware of that just because we're not going to be going lower on the board, that doesn't mean that, you know, things have stabilized enough they can expect to get any sort of a rally, because I think that any rally will most certainly be mitigated, you know, by basis deteriorating.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us, and we do appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, Tom.
Matt Bennett, of course, as a grains market analyst for Channel Seeds, a consultant with them, joins us from his Windsor, Illinois office, fills in for Dan Zwicker. If you'd like to hear what he has to say again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll also find, if you look over on the right-hand side of the page, an Outlook meetings schedule, and it lists a series of meetings that we're doing right now in the next 2 weeks, in fact, with the Farm Credit Buildings and with a bank in Watseka. If you're interested in going to one of those, especially the Farm Credit ones, you can RSVP to them. We'll be talking both about the commodity markets and about the Farm Credit meetings, the farm programs, the sign-up process, and what kinds of things you might be thinking about as we look forward to the ARC and PLC decision. It is fairly early in that process, but you might want to come and hear a bit more about what the ARC and PLC programs will be offering over the next at least 5 years, and depending on what they do in Washington, D.C., a bit longer. It's all at willag.org. Now, up next, a conversation I had this morning with Scott Irwin, ag economist at the University of Illinois, about an article he posted to the Farm Doc Daily website yesterday that took a look at the value in crop tours and how they work statistically. You wrote an article and posted it to the Farm Doc Daily website yesterday discussing crop tours, the validity of the numbers statistically, what they might mean, and came out of, I think, probably discussions you had about the USDA figures. You've been looking at those along with Daryl Good for several years now, and what it takes statistically to come up with, for instance, an average national yield for corn and what the production size looks like. So I'm wondering, when you put all of that together and you started to think about crop tours, how accurate might those tour numbers be, and how much of a grain of salt should we take them with when we are hearing about them?
Well, I'll start with our conclusion and work backwards. The way we come out on crop tours is that they provide useful qualitative information. Is this a good crop? Is this a poor crop? Is this an average crop? But for a couple of different reasons, a big grain of salt in terms of any quantitative forecasts that come from these kind of crop tours. In other words, the Illinois state average yield will be 191 bushels. We don't think that there's much reliability, mainly because of the way and the size that the samples are taken.
So how many samples would need to be taken in a tour for just the state of Illinois to make that useful?
It turns out that that depends on how confident you want to be in that estimate, and then also how wide of a range do you want to be X percent confident about.
So we'd be up in 1,000, 5,000?
Well, if you wanted to say be 95% confident in Illinois that you're within plus or minus 2 bushels, you would need roughly 1,400 randomly distributed yield samples across the state of Illinois.
There are a couple of things there that I need to understand. Randomly distributed, what does that mean?
It literally means that you're not just following a highway, or you're not determining your sample based on friends or where you can get easy access. You literally look on a map and you have to effectively flip a coin to determine where things land on the map. Maybe a better analogy, Todd, is that you have to throw darts at a map, and where those darts land is where you should sample.
So having a set, and this happens on many tours, a set run, because most people would think, hey, I need to go back to the same place every time for consistency, if for nothing else, year after year, and you're suggesting that, no, randomness is actually more important in this process.
Absolutely, and that's counterintuitive to a lot of people, but all sampling for opinion polls or political preferences, anything, it all depends on the randomness in the sample selection, because it's that randomness that assures that your sample is representative of the true population.
And I almost hate to ask this, because I don't know the answer to the question, and I'm a little fearful of the answer to the question, Scott.
I'll try not to go into professor mode.
Well, you can, but the USDA reports, are they random enough?
Well, I can't honestly say I know for certain exactly the answer to that question, because I don't have access to exactly how they do it. But I can say I am highly confident that they are as random as needed. I have high degree of confidence in their procedures. They've been built up over more than 50 years, and I think they know how to do this.
And for their part, USDA does give a range or an error, a plus or minus error, in each of their reports. I don't recall, frankly, what the error was for the national yield the last time around at 167.4.
I believe they target 2% with 95% confidence. So 2% of 167.4 would be roughly plus or minus 3 bushels.
On either side, which would be a big swing. So that would run them...
Again, I think they're very open about this. You have to go to the back pages, but they don't hide what they believe their
error rate is.
Their error rate is. It's plus or minus 3 bushels. So the way to think about it, the right way statistically, is thinking about that roughly from 164 to 170, they're 95% confident that that's where the true yield will land.
And that narrows down as we get further into the season, but they also have many more samples that they're dealing with.
Actually, they don't take, they take about the same number of samples as they go through the cycle.
Correct,
the
surveys that they get at the end.
They get more accurate, interestingly enough, because there's less of a forecast element on both sides of the surveys that they take. On the farm operator surveys, you get to October in particular, farmers, they're surveying roughly the same number of farmers, but those farmers have more accurate data themselves about the yields. And on the objective yield side, where they're taking their own independent measurements, they have more, they can take more accurate measurements. So it's kind of tricky that it's the same sample. Where they really ramp up the sample size is for the quarterly December ag survey, which is the basis for those final, quote unquote, final estimates they release in January. They basically double the size of the farm operator survey in December for the reasons that they want to have a much tighter level range for 95% confidence when they release that. What everybody assumes is a point estimate without error, but you'd read the back pages, they're very open. It's always an estimate that has some error.
Okay, so as an ag economist, as a statistician, when you look, let's just take the August numbers, at crop tours in August, at the USDA figures in August, do you take the USDA figures as an economist, statistician, as the quantitative number, thinking about the error rate, and then the crop tours as a qualitative number that gives you some insight into whether the error rate is to the plus or minus side of?
I think that's a really good way to think about it, because undoubtedly, after years of study, my conclusion is the USDA August forecast and then subsequent forecasts deserve their position as market benchmarks. No one else is taking as large of surveys, and I don't believe anyone else has as well-developed procedures that are very rigorous in terms of their survey design and the randomness of the samples and the right way they take their measurements. So taking that as the starting point makes a lot of sense. The only thing I would add to looking at the crop tour information, are we going to go up or are we going to go down in September? You have to look at a lot of them. Generally, they have such small sample sizes that you have to put together a large number of those. I like to think of it this way. There's a term out there now in statistics called crowdsourcing. Think of the crop tours in total as a rough crowdsourcing way to try to get a sense of whether the next USDA estimate will be bigger or smaller. But to do that with only one particular crop tour estimate is probably questionable.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can find his writings on this subject on the Farm Doc Daily website. The article was posted this week. Again, the address there is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In a couple of minutes, we'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast and some interesting thoughts again on statistics, history, weather, temperature, and how big the corn crop will be, that with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Cherry Turnover Day. It's also St. Augustine of Hippo's Day, patron of brewers. On this day in agricultural history in 1798, the first American vineyard was planted in Lexington, Kentucky. A Frenchman named John Dufour accepted the challenge by the Wine Industry Association of Kentucky to introduce commercial winemaking in the U.S. The first crop was a great success, but that was the last year the vineyard bore fruit. Disease plagued the grapes, and Dufour eventually moved on to Indiana. By the way, a small portion of the grapes at the Lexington site eventually made it to the table of Thomas Jefferson. In 1837, John Leah and William Perrins of Worcester, England, started manufacturing Worcester sauce. The first product was so strong that it was considered inedible, and a barrel of the offending brew was exiled to Leah and Perrins' basement. A few years later, needing space for storage, the two decided to move the barrel, but gave it one more try, discovering the sauce had fermented and mellowed. In 1875, Stephen McCormick died. He was the inventor and manufacturer of a cast iron plow with removable parts. And in 2002, Spaniards threw 120 tons of tomatoes at each other at the annual Tomanita Festival in Buenos, Spain. The annual tomato fight is the biggest food fight in the world. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day
Illinois Public Media. Mike Tenora now here with the weather forecast. It's been a bit rainy. I'm wondering if rainfall will continue across the Midwest or not.
It certainly looks like they will, and we have pretty high confidence that we're moving into a very wet pattern. The wet pattern has actually already started. That is ongoing today in parts of Iowa and across other areas of the Western Corn Belt. That is the beginning of what looks to be an active pattern. We have a couple of things taking place. The first one being that it's very warm and hot off to the south of the Corn Belt, and it's fairly cool up to the north, pretty seasonable actually. And because of that, we have a boundary that's lining up across the Midwest. On top of that, we have a number of waves of energy that are flowing eastward along that boundary, and the first one is happening now. That's why it's raining off to the west. And there's numerous waves of energy that will flow along that boundary over the next 7 to 10 days, and possibly even longer than that. Because of that, we think there's a real high chance for above-average rainfall across most, if not all, of the Corn Belt. We're talking about widespread rainfall of 1 to 3 inches across the region, with highest amounts across the northwest half of the Corn Belt. That would be to the north and west of Champaign, but we still would be looking at 1 to 3 inches in central Illinois, with the possibility for over 5 inches further to the north and west. Now, some of that rainfall has already occurred. In eastern Nebraska overnight, several reporting stations recorded over 3 inches of rain for the last 24-hour period, and we think we'll see more reports like that varying across the Corn Belt over the next 10 days. So this is a wet pattern, and how exactly that will relate to crop production is a bit of a mystery.
So if we take a look at the month of August, Mike, and we're about to wrap it up, how does it compare? I mean, we've had a lot of rainfall. What were the temperatures and rainfall like, and what might that mean for the corn crop in particular, do you think?
Well, we have high confidence that we'll end up around the 5 to 10 wettest August on record across the U.S. corn and soybean belt. So August will have been quite a bit wetter than normal. If you look at temperatures, we'll have been right around average and actually a tiny bit above average, probably around a half a degree above average. And that's primarily due to all the hot weather we had over the last 5 to 10 days across the southern third to half of the corn belt. That sent those temperatures for the month up quite a bit. If you look at U.S. corn yields since 1960, of the 10 highest yields we had on record, every single one of those were accompanied by a cooler than average August. So since this August is expected to be warmer than average, it makes you question if we can have one of the 10 highest yields on record. When we take a look at that, we have to detrend those yields to make sure we look at them as if they all occurred in 2014. And based on what we're seeing, the 10th highest corn yield on record would point to a yield of 168.1 bushels per acre for the central U.S. or for the U.S. as a whole. So that would kind of be the maximum that we would see historically based on what we've seen. Maybe we'll end up higher than that, but just basically a basic look at August temperatures suggests that that might be difficult.
Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, helps us to wrap it up. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.